TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to this very special edition of TV Campfire Podcast. This week we got to talk to the cast of the show Grimm, including David Gwentoli, who plays Nick Burkhart, and Russell Hornsby, who plays Hank Griffin. Grimm airs on NBC on Friday nights. Enjoy the interview.
Our next question comes from the line of Scott Katz with UsTownHall.com. Please go ahead.
Yes, actually, it's ustownhall.com, but thank you guys for taking the call today.
Thank you.
Okay, and my question is for both of you. If you can, sort of reflect on this past year and how it's been for each of you in terms of your personal career and how the show has been going for you and the fan reaction and the network support, just everything that's happened to you on this journey for the last year. And we'll start with David, and then Russell, you can chime in with your answer.
Appreciate it, absolutely. From a standpoint of an actor, I mean, I've grown leaps and bounds. I've learned so much. You really get thrown into it, and you don't stop running until 22 episodes are done and 9 months has passed. And I've been, you know, very fortunate to get to work alongside, you know, guys who are youthful veterans of the entertainment industry, like Russell Hornsby and Silas Weir Mitchell. And these guys have really, you know, been great and gracious and taught me a lot just by kind of, you know, rocking it every day. And the fans have been unbelievable. Like, I've had fans in the past, but genre TV fans aren't passive fans. They kind of, they're completely active. They watch the episode, and then next thing you know, they're writing fan fiction or creating more scenarios and asking questions, and they really hold you accountable. The whole experience has been wonderful.
Okay, and for Russell, how about you?
Oh, well, for me, this experience has been rather surreal for myself. I mean, I guess I would consider myself a veteran of, you know, television and, you know, to a certain extent, you know, having been doing serious radio before, but this is like the first time I've been on a show that people actually watch. And so just sort of getting used to the sort of the hubbub and fanfare and being, like, for the first time, like, recognized has been crazy. And so I really thought that I had sort of made it 5 years ago, and I realized, oh, no, I didn't. You know, and but the work schedule has been very intense, like I've never experienced, you know, just all the hours that we've had to put in, being on location, being in Portland, shooting outside in the rain and, you know, at night. It's, you know, it's really sort of taught me to, you know, I've just learned to appreciate this whole experience and, you know, just what it's like to, you know, as an actor, learning just new things about myself, you know, as an actor and as a performer, and, you know, all the stuff that I can handle, you know, I never thought I could up to this point. And again, you know, the fans have been crazy. I mean, in a good way. You know, like they said, they're, you know, genre fans are just, they're nuts about, you know, their shows that they love and they follow them, and they're very interactive and, you know, very smart. So, I'm really curious to see what the next season is going to bring as far as the show is concerned, but also from a fan perspective.
Okay, and speaking of next season, what would you like to see happen with each of your characters? And we'll start again with David.
I'm excited for Nick to become more of a badass, so to speak. Throughout this season one, he's become, went from a very passive observer of what was taking place to a real kind of go-getter, where he tried to work the politics of, you know, what Vessin were against him and who was for him, who was going after his loved ones, who was his friend. And I think that certain events will make him a little more aggressive.
Okay, and Russell, what about you?
My hope is that, you know, Hank sort of finds out what's behind door number one. And, you know, if that's the case, then just sort of seeing an opportunity for the relationship to develop, I think, between the three of them, sort of Nick, Monroe, and Hank, as they sort of try to solve these crimes together. And I guess sort of the drama that could possibly ensue between the three of them. You know, I had a little joke today that there's a chance for a nice love triangle, you know. And as, you know, maybe possibly, you know, Monroe and myself are, you know, fighting for the affections of Nick Burkhart. So it'll be fun.
Okay, and is the Woman in Black character going to continue on to next season, or is it just this one episode?
I don't have a definitive answer to that, but I would imagine that, yes, she would continue on to next season.
Okay, well, thank you very much for speaking with us today, and I'll hand it off to the next caller.
Thank you.
Our next question comes on the line of Karen Moll with A Sci-Fi Vision. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks, you guys. It's so great to talk to you again. My first question is for David. You know, Nick's been keeping so much to himself for months and months, and to the point of jeopardizing his relationship. And where do you think his head is going into this final episode?
Yeah, things have really come to a head, haven't they, for Nick? Now, you know, Hank has seen someone completely change before his very eyes. I think he might be in a serious state of denial and also firmly aware that a paradigm is about to shift and he's going to have to let someone in or else he's just going to lose his mind.
I'm psyched to see him maybe let Juliet in. I'm hoping maybe we get to see a little more of her in this next episode and next season. Is there a chance for a larger role for her?
Oh, sure. You know, and Bitsy Tulloch is such a wonderful actress, and I think the writers are excited to kind of include her in a more active way as the episodes go on.
Okay, great. And a quick question for Russell. What's up with Hank? Is he? And he's been a little slow on the uptake. You think he's in denial, or is he just really doesn't get it?
In denial about in regards to what?
He's seen so many weird things. He's seen so many weird things.
I think he's sort of waiting for another pretty other shoe to drop. You know, I've been sort of using the analogy of when crime, you know, hit in the early 80s, you know, there was uptick in robberies and whatnot. And you know, I think a lot of police officers were wondering, well, what's going on? Why is there such a, you know, why is the crime rate gone up? You know, robberies and breaking and entering and stuff like that. And then they realized that, you know, it took them like 6 months to a year later, they realized that crack had hit the streets. You know what I mean? So I don't think he's so much in denial as he's just waiting for another shoe to drop. I think having been on the force these 10, 15 years, he knows that something else is going to happen. You know what I mean? And he is taking note of the fact that the city has gotten a little weirder, the crimes have gotten a little weird and just suspiciously different, but he just hasn't been able to put his finger on it yet. And so, you know, being the cop that he is, he knows that there's something going on behind this, and he just has to wait for the other shoe to drop.
That's a really great analogy. Thanks for that. And good luck with the last episode.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Crystal Taylor with Suite101.com. Please go ahead.
Thanks for talking with us, guys. I want to talk about, I guess, character growth. So starting with David, how have you planned or played, you know, Nick's growth through the season?
You know, the writers do most of that work for us. We have some great writers, so I'm very thankful for that. I think my arc, generally speaking, in those terms, it went from, you know, constant befuddlement to, you know, he was, this whole new role was thrown on him, and he didn't know what to do with it at first, and he kind of was in denial at first, and he wanted business to go back to usual at first, and, you know, ultimately, there's no changing what has happened, so he kind of accepted it. He still obviously doesn't know quite how to fuse his normal day-to-day life and his new night job, I suppose you could say. But he definitely is an active player in this world now, and he uses the tools that he's been given, some of his abilities he's been given, to A, try to get the bad guy, and B, try to kind of work the greater Vesson system.
Okay. Well, I know that you got fantastic writers, and I know that they do a lot of this, but I'm not sure with series television, but you know how actors usually, when they go into a project, they create a character life for themselves. So I was wondering what you had maybe done as a character life for progression, not necessarily what the writers did.
Well, going into the season, you know, I always thought Nick Burkhart was a guy who was very happy with a girlfriend, a living girlfriend. He wanted to get married. He had a not-so-stable childhood because he was being raised by his Aunt Marie. And there was a lot of moving around for reasons he didn't really understand at that point. So he was happy to have his house, his girl, his job. He knew he was a good profiler. It was kind of a special instinct he had, but he didn't really understand why. And he wanted a not-so-crazy adult life because he had a crazy childhood. And, you know, the inciting incident in the pilot was, of course, I start seeing things and I think I'm losing my mind. And I desperately want to keep my world from unraveling. And that's kind of the goal of Nick Burkhart. And then and he grows throughout the season. And just kind of has to deal with his new reality.
Okay, thank you. Now, Russell, I'm not sure if you maybe have answered this with the last caller, because I had wanted to talk about character growth in terms of the fact that Hank is seeing a lot of weird things, and yet you have to pretend that you don't see them or whatever, or you have to have your own reality for that. And I just was wondering if you could speak to that in terms of how you play the character growing.
Well, first off, you know, I have to ground the character in a reality. You know, there is a fantastical world element. There is a fairy tale element to the show. I don't exist in that element, although the show exists around me. I mean, that element exists around me. So I have to approach everything is real, and that's what I do. So, basically, I have to approach everything from, you know, the standpoint that, you know, this is all confusing me. You know, this is confusing my, you know, my character, and this is strange. You know what I mean? And it's like as if, like, honestly, if you walked outside today and you saw somebody transform into a monster, you would go crazy. You know, and that's how I approach it, as if, like, this is real. I don't know that he's a Grimm. I don't know if there's this, you know, parallel alternate universe or alternate world, you know, where people turn into creatures or creatures turn into people. So I just approach it very honestly and very much rooted in reality. And I think, I feel like I'm sort of the leveling force, you know, the show, and that's on the procedural side. And, you know, that's what I try to do. I don't try to get ahead of it. I don't try to think, you know, outside of my realm. You know, Hank is just, he's a police officer, you know, fighting crime.
Thank you. And I want to say I would love to see the three of you guys working together rather than, you know, separately. I think that would be
it'd be very fun.
Yeah. It would be. Yeah, it would be a lot of fun, you know. I think as the writers are sort of, you know, mapping out the journey of the characters and of the show, know, when you're looking at a story that, that sort of arcs over 22 episodes and, you know, with one of Hope's five seasons, I think you just, you have to pace it out and you have to take your time. And I think it's always good for the audience to just, you know, take the journey. You know what I mean? If we just take the journey and allow things to unfold, there's a lot more to enjoy.
Good. Okay. Good luck with next season. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Tony Taldio with Sci-Fi Talk. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, I was in the press conference with you guys at the beginning of the season, so it's nice to finish it off right now with you guys.
Cool.
Congratulations.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Question for each of you, the relationship between Captain Renard and both your characters, and particularly with Nick, he's obviously somebody connected in this hierarchy here, and he's kind of almost protecting him. I mean, do you guys have your own theories, and also do you see something maybe coming next season between Renard and especially Nick coming up as far as their relationship?
Well, I think as Nick is concerned, speaking for Nick, he doesn't really have an eye on Renard at this point. I think Renard's got the goods on him, and he does not have the goods on Renard. And then David speaking, I think we're going to be learning a lot more about Renard's family, what he comes from, and what his purpose is. Why is he protecting me? Why does he want a Grimm close to him? Other than, you know, it's good to have, you know, an eye on the Grimm. But I think that we in the audience will learn a lot more. Other than that, I don't know the specifics.
And for Russell, what was it like to do the whole arc with the love potion story? That must have been some fun acting for you.
It was a lot of fun, you know, sort of in a Midsummer Night's Dream, if you will, you know. And, you know, and just working alongside Claire Coffey, plays Adeline, you know, it was a lot of fun. And just, you know, just taking a whole different bend to the character, taking the character on a different sort of arc. And journey was fun, and you know, just sort of being in love with love. It was a good time. I guess we saw sort of a more playful and vulnerable side of Hank that I think audiences didn't know Hank had. So that's always great.
Thank you guys, and definitely looking forward to the finale coming up. Hopefully, we'll talk again during this call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Olivia L. Mannon with Wendopolis. Please go ahead.
Wheatonopolis. My first question is, in the last episode, we saw Nick lying to Hank about monsters in the woods and things like that. And I was wondering, once Hank finds out the truth, how do you think that will affect your friendship?
No, that'll, you know, that's interesting. It depends on how the writers write it. but I think at first I'm sure that, you know, if and when he finds out, he'll be in denial, you know, because that just doesn't happen. That's like stuff you read about in books and like watch in movies that like, you know, Twilight shit, you know what I mean? So from Hank's, you know, point of view, that can't happen. You know, and so I'm sure that there'll be a time where he's just in denial and thinks that Nick is crazy, thinks the world is nuts, and possibly thinks that Hank's going crazy. You know, I have to be dreaming, like some psychedelics or something have been ingested. Who knows? You know, but I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, and
I think my character Nick, he's very worried about this, you know, this very thing, and I know that he's keeping an eye on Hank, making sure that he's not going to lose his mind over this, and if he starts to, then he'll intervene.
Okay. I have another question about Nick's character, which is on the episode where he, like, just destroys the two Grim Reapers, it seemed like all of a sudden Nick had all these kind of new powers. So I was wondering, as an actor, how did you play that, and what do you think about that? Does that seem crazy, or...?
This is how I kind of thought of Grimm's. I feel like it's a bloodline where you kind of have some natural inclination, some natural, I guess, powers, but they have to be, you know, all these other Grimms knew that they were Grimms from the get-go, and they've been, you know, coming up with these powers, and they've been training, literally, and honing these skills, and he... Nick was just told about them maybe 8 months ago in the world of our story. So, yeah, he had these kind of inclinations, but it just took some honing to kind of finally fully harness his skills. And, you know, they had me kind of training with weapons in several of the episodes and really kind of embracing these tools that his aunt left him in the trailer. And I think that he has surprised himself on occasion. But, you know, even next season, I think that Nick's going to be even more capable and useful.
Well, I would just like to say that I would really like to see some more hand-to-hand because that was kind of fantastic. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Christy Turnquist with Oregon Newspaper. Please go ahead.
Hi there, it's me again, Christy Turnquist with the Oregonian.
How's it going?
Good. Are you guys in Portland right now?
No, we're in New York. We're at the Upfront.
Right at the Upfront. Okay. Yeah. But I understand that you're going to be back here at the end of May to start work on season two.
That's correct.
That's kind of a no vacation.
Correct. That is correct.
Why the quick turnaround?
They have high expectations for the show. They want to, I think, premiere the show earlier in the season than usual, and so they want to get a jump start on the episodes. And I think also because of the turnaround of the show with all the CGI and the effects, you know, they need a lot more lead time. Than other dramas, so they just really need to sort of get in here and get to work as soon as possible.
Yeah,
correct. And they have the Olympics this year, so they want to push some shows during the Olympics. And in order to do that, they need shows for when the Olympics ends. So that's also why this is kind of
That's no longer a secret. I forgot.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Well, yeah,
we just announced it this afternoon, so I was like, oh. Yeah,
how does filming here in Portland kind of affect the show, and how does it affect how you think about your characters and your performances?
Well, filming on location in general allows, you know, if you've ever been to camp, it's like that. It's a whole new place that started with an entirely new experience. So it is, there's an otherness to it. It's not life. It's it's the world of Grimm now to all of us, you know? And I think it's helped a lot in our chemistry, I think, within the actors, because let's face it, that we don't know a ton of people up there. And it's kind of, we hang together and we get on together. And as far as the show, we could not do it without Portland. You know, I couldn't imagine taking this to a soundstage in L.A. and just the amount of moss they'd have to put up in Los Angeles. It would be impossible. It makes such a wonderful aesthetic. It makes it creepy, and it can help do the acting for you when you're out on location and it's raining and you look like you're in a forest from the Mesozoic era. You know, it just kind of, it kind of brings it to life. And as living there, it has been a joy. I've been talking to tons of people here in New York. Everybody asks what it's like to be coming to Portland. And I'm just like, it's one of the greatest towns in the United States. And that's not a lie. It's like a college campus for adults. And we couldn't be happier.
And Russell, how about you?
I echo his sentiment. It is. It is like camp. And you know, for better, for good, and for bad, like you just realize that you don't think like the world exists, you know, outside of the show. But it's a lot of fun. It's just I enjoy working in Portland. Although I must say I didn't realize I was like, because of the winter, you know, the rain and the gray, I didn't realize I was depressed until I went home for Christmas and like the sun hit me and I said, oh my gosh, I have been locked away in my apartment for the last 3 months.
That's crazy.
And so I had to sort of, sort of figure things out and just kind of live my life a little differently when I came back in January. But
did you get one of those heat lamps to sort of pretend you were getting sun exposure?
I was in denial about the heat lamps. I was in denial about the D13 or something like that, vitamin D13 or something that you, some pill you're supposed to take, and I didn't take it. And I'm going to get all those things next year, this year, for the coming winter.
So when you're filming around town and on locations, what are the interactions that you have with folks?
I'd say they're generally positive interactions. I mean, people love seeing their town that they're so proud of kind of celebrated on a network television show. I know other shows have been in town and haven't really used Portland for what it's worth, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's so much just visually that Portland can give a show, and we've totally used it. So people are very excited about that, and they express that, and, you know, they treat us like gold, and we return the favor.
So on a scheduling. Oh, I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
I think we've sort of written like a, given them like a visual love letter.
Yeah.
They'll appreciate it.
And it's funny. I was just talking to somebody this morning that I just happened to run into, and the first thing she mentioned was how much she loves Grimm. So definitely, people here love the show.
Sure.
Yeah. On a scheduling question, you guys are going to be sharing the Friday night slot with Whitney and Community? That's a change. How do you think that's going to work in terms of flow of the programs and the audiences that they attract?
Well, listen, I mean, Grimm's always going to be a break in flow a bit, you know, because it's such a unique thing. So I think it's a think it's a great, really great pairing, especially... You know, Community is what is our, you know, real lead-in, and it has a very vocal cult following. Mm-hmm. Grimm has a very vocal cult following. I don't know if they're the same cult, but I think it'd be kind of cool to see, you know, these fans, you know, get into a new show.
Thank you very much. And we do have another question. It comes from the line of Felicia Battle with Verizon Spotlight Magazine. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for talking to us. And congratulations on a great season and the upcoming new season.
Thank you so much.
When I talk to people who have done so much on television, I always want to know what are your favorite, some of your favorite things to watch on television?
I'm a big fan of Mad Men. Shows like that and Luther. A lot of the cable dramas, Breaking Bad and, you know, I can't remember, there's so many. But those are the ones that sort of jump out at me.
I have not yet gotten into Luther, though I know I should. I just watched 2 seasons of Downton Abbey, and that was just brilliant. Dope stuff. And right now, this is not very original of me, but I started with the American Office pilot about a month ago, and I'm about on Netflix about 4 seasons into it, episode for episode. So I've been watching that a lot.
Okay. Anything crazy on either of your DVRs that you'll admit to watching?
The show Girls is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty into that. That HBO show.
Yeah. It's a good show. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, if you have more, feel free.
What's the one? Well, it's on my DVR, so I have to watch it sometimes. But my wife is a big fan of The Amazing Race, and we've kind of gotten into that, and so you know we travel a lot together, and so you know we'll be lost. We've been lost in Germany cities quite a few times, and my wife goes, "This is an amazing race moment, so we have to, you know, let's put our thinking caps together. Let's go. How are we gonna get out of here? How are we gonna find our way back to the hotel, or you know, or back to the airport?" So we make a game out of being lost in a foreign country.
Nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our final question comes from the line of Janice Kay with sciencefiction.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for doing this. I'm a big fan. You mentioned, David, that you were hoping that next season Nick would be a little more badass. I've noticed that there's been a progression in his character. He seems to be a little more powerful, a little more stronger. Do you think they might put a supernatural element in his capabilities next season?
I think one of the cool things about Nick is that he doesn't necessarily have supernatural powers. I would be surprised if that happened. What I really am excited for is more and better fights. And getting to use some of these. I mean, there's a weapons cabinet in my trailer. Not my trailer in Hollywood, my trailer that Aunt Marie gave me in Portland. And I'm really excited to get my hands on some of those weapons and really, really use them.
Do you have a favorite one that you've used so far?
You know, there's something sexy about a crossbow, I gotta say.
Oh, my man, I was right there with you.
Yeah, man.
So I take it, Russell, you want to use a crossbow, too. You're hoping Hank will get a chance to check out the weapons closet.
All in good time. That crossbow was sexy. He looks sexy, even sexy using it. I'll give it up to him.
Now, is there a weapon that actually kind of freaked you out when you first saw him? Because they are kind of pretty terrifying when you get a glimpse of it for the first time.
Yeah, the real, I mean, weapons in that they could bludgeon a person to death. Like, you know, when there's a metal ball with spikes on a chain, it's not like a fake metal ball on spikes with spikes on a chain. It's like the real thing. So, you know, you take them out, and you like wheel them around a little bit, and they have definite girth to them. You got to be careful, kids.
And how about creature-wise? Any creatures that's after makeup, coming out of the makeup trailer, just lying, that's pretty gruesome, that's pretty scary?
Some of the death scenes, some of the corpses have really made, like, I have visceral responses to. Other than that, I even know the guy in the makeup, so I'm just like, hey, it's that guy. But some of the death scenes, I remember there were rats at one point pouring out of a guy's chest and mouth, and I mean, I couldn't even... it made me really uneasy.
Well, how about you, Russell? I know you've seen some of those death scenes, too. Anything that you are kind of, that you had to be taken aback, lose your lunch or anything?
Yeah, well, see, the thing is, I get grossed out very easily. So, actually, I've never seen, I actually close my eyes even when they're in front of me. So, but no, the rat, that whole rat sequence that happened, that disgusted me to no end. and so, I mean, I'm really actually in real life scared of rats. So, but I mean, I honestly, I just appreciate sort of just the artistry of all the creatures, you know, both from the CGI and the practical. I just think, you know, our department and team has done just a fabulous job, you know, with all the creatures and just creatively as well. It's been great.